Okay, welcome to this podcast. We're going to be talking about handling meltdowns and emotions. I'm going to get stuck straight in. Now, the honest answer is it's really hard to do this in any kind of short way because this is a complex subject and it's one that I've spent over the last few years. I've been working all about parenting. I think more than any other subject I've spent on this, talking about emotions, thinking about it, researching it, looking at it from a neuroscientific point of view, you know, reading all the books that have ever been written, or as many as you can. It's hard to do this subject justice in a bite-sized, consumable way. So what we're going to cover today is going to be the most important stuff, but I really want to be upfront and say that there's a lot more we could talk about it. What I'm going to do, as usual, is I'll follow the written homework that you've got. Some people like to listen, some people like to read. I think both is probably advisable. I'm going to try and reflect in this podcast and give additional thoughts on the written material as well, but I'll follow the structure just to help us to go through, and maybe it'll help you if you're reading and listening at the same time. So the first thing I wrote about is, who the heck are you to tell me about meltdowns? And for me, it's really important to share with you that I've been in the situation you're in, or have been in recently, many, many times. I know exactly how it feels to be full of frustration and rage and tension and stress and resentment and irritation at my children, both my children, my wife, you know, everyone, anyone who gets in my way. And I really want to be honest about that, because I think it's not a fantasy land that we should build ourselves around how we have children who never have meltdowns or difficult emotions. And, you know, I'd like my children to be much more agreeable. It would be more convenient for me. But we didn't talk about this in the homework, but one of the things we have to understand is that a disagreeable child goes on to be the kind of person who asks for a pay raise. Asking for a pay raise is one of those classic things. People who are very agreeable as children end up being agreeable adults. They don't ask for extra money from their boss because they're too shy and embarrassed. Now, if we all want our children to be successful in work, and assuming the world of work looks how it does right now, being able to pluck up the courage, or to have the self-confidence or the self-belief to say, this is what I want, this is what I stand for, that's a very admirable trait in an adult. Not such an admirable trait in a child, not when we're stressed and tired at the end of a long day. So I'm kind of grinning as I say this, but it is an interesting conversation to be had around how the things that we dislike in our children are also the things that we like them to have as adults. Confident, independent, question authority. Fine, fine, just not on my watch. So I'm going to try and have that kind of authentic attitude today. Maybe I'll share some more stories if they come to mind, because I want to be real with you. This isn't about eliminating negative emotions. It's certainly not about getting rid of meltdowns. So the first thing I talked about inside the homework, it was a kind of joke question. I've arranged the homework as a kind of series of questions and answers just to make it easier to consume, is tell me something provocative about children's meltdowns. And I enjoyed writing this because this is definitely a big realization for me, which is most of the time when we're saying, how can I get my child to have less meltdowns, or my child is having meltdowns and I'm scared and worried by them, and I think it's, you know, is there something wrong with them, and how can I stop this from happening, is we're asking our kids to do something that most of us can't do, which is discover and understand what emotions are and also decide how to actually manage them. We never got any training whatsoever in managing our emotions from our parents. I don't think I've ever met a parent who's really told me, hand on heart, that, yeah, my parents helped me to understand what emotions are and deal with them. And I have worked now, you know, coming up on 200,000 parents in workshops and events and seminars and stuff like that since 2019. Nobody's ever told me that, or less than 1% for sure. So the provocative thing here is we're actually expecting our children to be better at doing something that we still can't do. If you want your child to be better at emotional regulation, which I do for my children, I'm sure you do for yourself as well, my challenge and invitation to you is to start with yourself, which is why in the Calm Parent Challenge, first we work on ourselves and only then we move on to working with our children. And this is a line which has always stayed with me. And Sarah, if you're listening to this, you remember we talked about this with your son. Your child's ability to change is in direct proportion to yours. Or to put it another way, the more you're able to change, the more change you'll be able to see inside your child. If all of us now are determined not to give our children the kind of traumatic childhood that many of us remember, and I think that's an admirable expectation, we'll still make mistakes for sure. Surely one of the most important things we can do is start to teach our children to manage emotions better. Because, you know, reflecting on our adult lives, you know, other than money and bills and work and stuff like that, you know, financial stuff. And most of the big ticket stresses we ever have in our life are really about our relationships. You know, people leaving us, threatening to leave us, people dying, relationships that go wrong. And then, of course, as we become parents, you know, we move on from having problems with our friends and our partners to then having massive problems with our kids. And it's all about emotions. This is something I didn't put inside the homework, but now the thought occurs to me. You know, I have studied this subject so much. And for me, one of the biggest discoveries from studying neuroscience was that emotions are so fundamental to the human experience. They're not kind of by the way. They are basically the building block of our entire conscious experience. And emotions serve us. Good and bad emotions serve us. It's exactly like the pain reflex. We feel pain, we take a hand away from the stove. It hurts like hell, we hate the feeling, but it also helps to protect us. That is the benefit of negative emotions. So if you're feeling negative emotions about your kids, I invite you to be grateful to them. And the irony is that if you didn't feel those negative emotions, you probably wouldn't have taken the incredible journey of learning to be a better parent for them, with them, because of them, about them. Negative emotions, to quote Mona Delahook, are a little bit like lighthouses that are guiding you inside the dark. Actually, that's true of positive emotions as well. They come and then they go. Mood, on the other hand, is emotion over time, and mood-related disorders are something that we don't really cover here, but it can also be an important part of children's lives and our own lives as well. So, thank your emotion and thank where it's brought you to. That's a tremendously empowering energy, in my opinion. So a question we asked inside the homework, is there a difference between meltdowns and difficult emotions? And it's actually quite a good one to ask, because oftentimes we kind of mix them up together. As I write, I think there is a fundamental difference between the full range of emotions a human will experience every human being, and what we call meltdowns and tantrums. I'm just going to use meltdowns for today. So a meltdown in the technical sense is when a child is hyper-aroused, they're dysregulated, they're unable to process the environment and the sensory experience around them. And as you'll have discovered from our last homework, we make this super simple. We call this the red zone. Much, much easier. Difficult emotions, on the other hand, are those kind of things that we hear from our kids that we really dislike, like, I hate myself, I hate you, I hate my brother, I hate this food, there's something wrong with me, I'm not good enough. You know, the older a kid, the more complex and the more rich these feelings and emotions can become. I'm going to talk a little bit about both inside both the homework and here, with a bit of an emphasis on meltdowns, because meltdowns can be some of the hardest things for us to deal with. However, it is so, so important for us all to understand that all children will have all of the range of human emotions. I know we look around and we see other kids and we think, God, why are they so much, you know, why are they so much better than our children? I'm thinking about a mum I worked with, and she goes, my sister's kids, they're so well behaved. They live in France, you know, and it's like, yeah, they live in France. So they'll rebel later on. Okay. Like, that rebellion will come. The difficult emotions will come. You can't escape it. Again, think about our own lives. I know our children's emotions are scary, with them maybe feeling inadequate, not good enough. They say they hate themselves, they want to die. We had those feelings too. And from a developmental psychological point of view, and I know this is cold comfort for parents, but it's true. Like, your child being able to verbalize their feelings is not a bad thing. If the mind can't say it, then the body will. So when your child is able to verbalize feelings with you, it's also an indication of quite a lot of trust that they can share that with you and you're not going to destroy their world for it. So my invitation to you now is to give up the fantasy of the child who does everything you want like a little robot. It's only going to cause you to be unhappy, because experience will show you otherwise. And I share inside the homework three principles which I think are healthy for us to have. Number one, my child has the right to all their emotions. Number two, my child has the right to make mistakes. And number three, my child has the right to have meltdowns. So if you put that on your fridge, or if you say that to yourself every single day for 10 days or 20 days, your mind will start to act accordingly. Our child has the right to all their emotions. There's no such thing as bad emotions, contrary to what we were taught. They're uncomfortable for us, for sure. Definitely, because we were never taught how to deal with them. But emotions are like lighthouses, remember, they're calling us in the dark. They're a indication of the significance. It's called valence in neuroscience. It's the valence of a particular situation. Anyway, let's not go too far into the valence and the positive and negative valence of emotions, but it is very, very interesting. If you can start to be grateful for the difficulty, it's so much more empowering for you and for your child. Now, one of my favorite questions to ask us, or for us to ask ourselves, is how many meltdowns and tantrums is actually normal? Because I've lost count of the number of times I've worked with parents. They've got 1-2-year-olds and they're going like, my kid's having lots of meltdowns. I'm sick of it. How do I stop it? And the answer is not easily. Because for children aged 1 to 3, frequent meltdowns are very normal. They're age typical. And there's a very simple reason, which is children just don't have that developed green brain where they can go, I didn't get what I want, but maybe I'll get it tomorrow. That's a very green brain thought. That's the kind of thing we do often when we're capable of doing so. So typical tantrums around that age are going to last for a few minutes. You know, beyond 10 to 15 minutes, that's a red flag and it's concerning. We'll talk about that in a second. Between ages 3 and 5, meltdowns do become less frequent, but they're still very common. So now more than three quarters of children around that age are going to have occasional meltdowns and tantrums. And again, typically they last a few minutes, and whilst they tend to be really unpleasant for everybody involved, they're soon forgotten and our child goes back to operating inside their environment, capable of receiving input from us, talking to us, playing with us, drying off their tears and being back in the green zone. So if your child is having multiple meltdowns every single day and they're lasting more than 10 to 15 minutes, I don't want to call it a red flag, but maybe that's not the right way of putting it, but I'd certainly have a question mark there. And inside the Calm Parent Challenge, you're going to hear me say this again and again. The question to ask ourselves is why? Why is my child having this experience or having this behavior? And we have a series of modules, which you've either done or will be doing, which are all about understanding the why of your kid's behavior. So there's no need to panic, but it might well be that you just need additional support. And, you know, one thing we have to be very clear about here is neurodivergent kids, they just have much less ability to operate from the green zone place. So if your child has ASD, ADHD, ODD, PDA, you know, whatever traumatic background maybe your child or kind of major stresses your child has had to go through, all of those things are going to cause your child to be the kind of kid who has more and more frequent meltdowns. But everybody goes through the experience having meltdowns. It's not unusual. I know that's cold comfort, but it is part of the human experience. We have meltdowns too. We just, for the most of us, have better ways of dealing with them than smaller kids. And that brings me on to the next thing, which I discussed inside the homework, which is you may have in previous homeworks had a big realization about your own life. You know, something that's happening or not happening in your life, which is causing you to be way more inside the red zone. I'm not going to go over all of the things we discussed inside those homeworks and those ideas, but I do talk in this particular homework about sleep, diet, movement, and tech. I know from my own master's in applied neuroscience that sleep is the number one behavioral intervention with psychological challenges. You know, like if you're going to do behavioral interventions, you want to do sleep first. And working with mums and dads, very, very often I've heard that mums, you know, you love shortcharging your sleep to sacrifice for others, but it's, you know, it's like, it's a road to nowhere, right? Because when you're exhausted, everything becomes so much harder. Dads do this as well, but mums, you guys are good at this. You know, 5 or 6 hours sleep is just not good enough. So if you've had some realizations about your own life, taking in that challenge that whatever you do is going to help your child, I'd encourage you to think about how you can apply those same ideas to your kid. And I've included inside the homework just some recommended sleep durations per age. I don't want to go through them year by year. I think it would be redundant. But if your child is getting less sleep and also shifting around in their bed, interrupted sleep, waking up multiple times in the night, don't do anything other than work on sleep. You've heard me probably say that inside the Calm Parent Challenge. If you have poor quality sleep and you've identified that, fix sleep first. Because a tired human being has much less green zone capacity. And no new idea is going to work if you're inside that red zone because you're getting 5 to 6 hours sleep and you're sleeping with two kids who are, you know, really moving around a lot and destroying your REM and your deep sleep. Now on movement, I've also included some recommended movement time and exercise time for children. We human beings are designed to move our bodies. The average American gets less than 5,000 steps a day. I'm trying my hardest to get between 10 and 15,000. Thank the Lord for my dog. He helps keep me active every single day. And I remember during COVID just how frustrating it was for me physically not to be moving my body. Now that's me. Some of us, we can't for whatever health reason move our bodies in the same way. again, the invitation is to understand that when we move our bodies, we are much more inside that green zone. We're much calmer, and that gives us more capacity to deal with those difficult moments when something doesn't happen for us. So take a step back from the day-to-day and think about some of those structural decisions. When it comes to movement, you know, depending on the kind of school our kids go to, there can be a lot of movement or not very much movement. Then we can be in a car for a long time. If we can get our kids to have at least 30 to 60 minutes of moderate, vigorous activity a day, we should see a change in their behavior. So again, yes, it's good to use techniques. It's good to use all sorts of different techniques to moderate and support your child to behave better. But work on the why and work on the basics first before you move on to more complex stuff. Always start from the bottom up, from the body, from the organism, sleep, movement, diet. Maybe just share this with you. You know, in the case of ADHD kids, multiple studies have shown that when you change diet, you can either dramatically reduce or completely eliminate ADHD symptoms. I can share one for a really good study with you from Holland on that subject. 67% of the kids with severe ADHD, their ADHD disappeared. Now, they were put on a diet of lamb and lettuce, which is not going to be too realistic for many of us, but it shows us that when we can make those kind of interventions, things can really, really change. So what is happening during our kids' meltdown and tantrum? This is such an important understanding for us to have, which is they're not acting and thinking logically. We might still be calm, we might be in the green zone, but our children are going to be in the red zone. And the red zone is when our children are exploding, losing control. You know, most of us know this as the flight or fight zone. And I included in the homework, I hope this was a good example, I think it is. For me, it's so symbolic. One time I'd had an argument, I think, with my daughter, I can't remember what it was over, Zafia, and she left me a note in her sort of broken English. I don't want to destroy something, but something tells me to do. I'm kind of joking and laughing now, but at the time I read that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so the red zone. It's such a good example of the energy that comes from us when we're inside the red zone. I don't want to destroy something, but something is telling me to destroy something. That's what the red zone is. We don't think logically. We lose all of that logical thinking. It's not the parts of our brain that are active at all. And again, this is backed up by neuroscience. The red zone is when we explode and we want to hurt. We want to lash out. And that's the behavior we see in our kids. And a reminder, the behavior we see in us as well. So our ability to support our child is really helpful for us to work out, okay, my kid is in the red zone. From now on, their behavior is not going to be logical. In the vast majority of cases, it's not deliberate. And therefore, I'm going to stop judging them by thinking they're doing it deliberately and they hate me and everything they say is true. Our kids are going to lash out physically, verbally, towards themselves. They may internalize, they may externalize the anger and the rage, but the rage will be there. Now, as I've already mentioned, if we are the parent of a neurodivergent kid, we're going to see children who are significantly more likely to have these kind of meltdowns and difficulties. Socially, emotionally, developmentally, that's par for the course for neurodivergent children. Everything we talk about today is just as relevant for you, mum and dad, of those kids. In fact, often more so. And the way I like to think about it is this. When a child doesn't get what they want, a typically developing child, depending on their age, like a 6 or a 7-year-old is going to be able to go, let's say they don't get a toy. They could say to themselves, because that's what the green brain does, it has a kind of internal conversation. Hey, I didn't get what I want, but maybe I'll get it tomorrow. Or maybe I'll get it later. Or maybe I'll get it in 5 minutes. Or you know what, I can go play with something else. So it's almost like they have multiple different options to or solutions to fix a problem. A neurodivergent kid just has much less bandwidth in their mind, way less ability to pick different tools from the toolkit. They only have one real toolkit, which is to have a meltdown and explode. This reminds me, actually, I didn't put this inside the homework and perhaps I should, which is, you know, can children have meltdowns to get what they want? And I think everybody probably knows the answer to this, which is yes. If our child has worked out that when they have tears and crying or lash out, mom or dad give in, it's quite likely that they'll have learned that cause and effect mechanism and they'll use it more often. However, when you see your child is really having struggles with their emotions, with meltdowns, and you think it's outside of that, then the challenge is to teach, to support, to give your child more tools in the toolkit. And the best way to do that is to be a part of that solution. Now, for neurodivergent kids, coming back to that subject, it is important to understand that you probably can't do this on your own, and it is wise to, as much as you possibly can, reach out for support. I'm a certified play therapist. There's a gazillion different play therapy techniques that we could add here, but I don't want to overwhelm everybody. So for now, if your kid is neurodivergent, you know, let's talk about that inside our meetings. Let's talk about that inside our WhatsApp. Reach out, talk to experts. Typically, most of them will give you a consultation conversation or spend some time with you at the start. You know, be a magpie and go and get as much experience as you can. And remember that you are far more powerful than perhaps you feel in terms of your ability to impact your kid and just generally in your life. So how should we respond when our child has a meltdown? Again, we could talk for a gazillion years about this, but I've shared five ideas with you, which I think are going to be helpful. Number one, are you, mum or dad, in the red zone or the green zone? Because if you're in the red zone, when your child has a meltdown and goes in the red zone, two red zones equals two volcanoes exploding even harder than ever before. So in that particular moment, I would invite you to just go, what zone am I in? And if you're in the red zone, the first thing that should come to you is, I'm in the red zone. I need to be in the green zone to handle this. Can I switch over with my partner if I have a partner at home? Can I say to my kid, for example, I'm going to come back to you in 2 minutes when I've done five deep breaths, or when I've gone to my room and read a book, or when I've had some quiet time? That is the parent who's moving from reactive to being proactive, who has a plan. Because the first question they're asking themselves is, where am I? And we can even say this to our kids. I'm in the red zone. Let's carry on this conversation when I'm back in the green. Or I can see you're going in the red zone. I'm going to go in the red zone. Let's continue this conversation later on today. There's multiple different options. Depends on the situation. Step one is self-reflection. Step two is to say to yourself and to give yourself a goal. And the goal is not, how do I persuade my kid to listen to me? How do I get them to tidy up? That's already red zone thinking, really, which is, you know, like, I'm going to make you feel my pain. I'm going to make you feel hurt. I was talking with a mum yesterday, and we were talking about how she can effectively have boundaries in her family. And just at the end, she goes, yeah, but what if I told them, you know, like, I'm really annoyed at you for the way you're, you know, and yeah, and it was like, I'm going to punish you, basically, for the way you're making me feel. I get it. That's very much red zone thinking. And we've all done it, me too, for sure. We need to be in the green zone. And that's also true for our kid. Step two is to think to ourselves and to set ourselves a goal. My goal is to support my child to go from the red zone to the green zone. And the simple thing is, you can't persuade your child of anything when they're in the red zone. You also can't use new rules, boundaries, parenting techniques. You can't use any of them when you're in the red zone. Learning, compromise, agreement, contracting and aligning, it only happens when both parties are in the green zone. So wherever you are, in public or at home, when you see your child is going into the red zone or they're already there, stop, shift gear, move to a solution focus and go into that. I'm going to support my child to go back to the green. Now, that brings me on to step number three, which is, when you see your child is in the red zone, stop talking. Stop using logic, because the conversation you've been having with your child, and I'm assuming that they are old enough that you can talk with them. Again, this is general stuff. Okay, you pick what works for you. It ceases to happen when your child's in the red zone, because they're hearing and processing almost nothing. Their body's in that red zone state. So that means that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you say to your child. You're going to get them more annoyed. And the example I give inside the homework is, of course, when someone asks us, you know, to calm down when we're annoyed, does it work for us? if our partner or ex-partner says that we need to chill out when we're really angry and feeling, you know, super frustrated about something, of course, it has the opposite effect. Well, that's just as true for our children as well. And part of this is just allowing your child to go through the experience of being frustrated and angry. If they say to you, you know, again, we have to be careful here because there's so many nuances about the kind of conversation you could be having with your kid. But I think stop using logic and change gears is a great way of thinking about it. So then step four is to support your child as they move from the red zone back into the green zone. So the idea I give inside the homework is that you're the support actor in their film. It's not for you to solve their red zone experience, okay? If they're above the age of one, moving from the red zone to the green zone is going to be something they do. It's going to come from within them. It could be that your child is very physical. That's actually a good thing. It means that they're physically expressing their anger and they'll calm down very, very soon. if you can help them to do that in a controlled way, that's actually a good thing. I will talk about that later on. When your child is ready, they may well come to you because what they're looking for is for you to support them to come back into the green zone as well. And this is a common mistake, which is we're angry and frustrated about something that's happened, so we close ourselves off to our children. They come to us looking for a cuddle and a hug, and that's the last thing they get from us. Recognize that your cuddle and your hug is not agreement or approval for what they've just said and done to their brother, their sister, or you, or anyone else in their family, or to the member of the public in the street. Your cuddle or your hug is because you've set yourself a goal. Your goal is to support them to move from the red zone back to the green zone. You can have that conversation about what happened when both of you are back inside the green zone. The need for connection, hugs, cuddles, a kind word, or maybe just moving straight into play with mum and dad is a part of the process. You can probably see their bodies start to become a little calmer. They stop jerking, they stop shaking, their thinking and their talking becomes more logical. That's a sign that your child is moving back into the green. It can be almost overwhelming to want to talk about what's happened. I recommend waiting just a little bit, okay? When both of you are fully back in the green zone, you can use this next technique. So, you know your child better than I do. Some of them won't want to speak to you whatsoever and they need quiet time. That's their way of getting back into the green. Some of them will need quiet time and then they'll run to you for a cuddle. Give them that cuddle when they're ready. The goal is not to punish them for what happened, it's to support them to come back into the green. And that brings me to step five, which is a technique which I've kind of semi-borrowed from Dan Siegel, but also doubled up on. It's called rupture, repair, and redirect. So some of you may know this from Dan Siegel, one of my absolute idols. It's okay to have a rupture. What's really important is to have a repair. So the rupture is that breakdown in connection that we all know so very, very well. The repair is a conscious act I describe in the homework of reconnecting, understanding, and closing the emotional loop. And redirect is what you offer next, which is the teaching and learning opportunity for your child. So it's a tool, it's a script, it's a strategy to use for the next time that situation happens, which of course it absolutely will. Let's say there's an example here from the homework. Our child has a tantrum because they couldn't have a snack before dinner. When both of you are back in the green zone, you can say, hey, I get why you were really hungry and you were upset when I said you couldn't have the snack. How about we agree to have a healthy snack after dinner? Or for example, you know, let's say that you and your child have a really difficult moment. They say they hate you. They run to their room. You can say to them, hey, I totally get why it was upsetting. I'm going to suggest that when this happens again and both of us are in the red zone, we both have 5 deep breaths before we continue talking. Another great redirect is to look at your child's energy, where it's going, and if it's going towards you or someone else, try and redirect it. An example I give has always stayed with me was of a mum I worked with in 2020, and her daughter used to throw things at her when she got upset. So the redirect that she taught her child was to throw a pineapple pillow in her room. It's okay to get angry, and it's okay to throw. It's okay to throw the pineapple pillow. It's not okay to throw the anything at me. Boom. Problem solved. Because the child was able to express that red zone, she was given the space to do so, and she wasn't punished for doing so because it was a way that worked for both people. So if you have a child who's doing a lot of hitting, and by the way, boys are far more likely to hit than girls, and most likely time you're going to be a victim of human aggression is when you're 2 and 3, according to all of the data and research. So if your child's a hitter at 2 or 3, it's not statistically unusual. It's easy for me to be blasé about it, of course, but just so you know, you probably already got this kind of suggestion from your school teacher or from someone you've spoken to, which is to give them an outlet for their red zone. That's what redirecting is all about. So you put these techniques together. You're stepping away from, I need to force you to think the way I think. I need to win this argument. And you're moving towards a teaching and growth mindset. What's happening is over time is your child knows they can come to you. They know they won't be rejected or punished for feeling their feelings. And also they'll feel like you're seeing things from their point of view and you actually have a solution. How many of our parents did that for us? Let's just take a moment to just reflect on how incredible that is, that we're the first generation of parents that are showing up for our children that way. I think that's absolutely spectacular. Well, With that 5-step process, and we could go into so many more details on sensory, and we're going to cover some of that inside the other modules, psychological needs and sensory as well. I'd like to go into some kind of like shorter Q&As. And the first one is, what do I say when my child says, I hate you, you're the worst mum in the world? And I get it, it's extremely painful to hear that. My recommendation, and I found this really works in my family and with the families I've worked for, is just to say very simply to your child what you know to be true, which is, well, I love you and I'll always love you. Well, I hate you, you're the worst person in the world. Well, I love you and I'll always love you. No, you don't. You don't love me. If you love me, you give me your sweets. In our family, we eat candies on Saturdays and Sundays. I know I love you. You see, again, that attitude is not, how dare you say that, you ungrateful child, you know, or I'm going to force you, I'm going to show you how much I love you. It's just very, very simple. I know who I am. I've thought about this before. This is the only thing I need to tell you in this situation. I'm not forcing you to not say that. I can't really, short of like taping your mouth, I can't stop you from saying that. But I'm going to be the firm, calm boundary where I express my true feelings for you. I can still be angry at you and still love you. I can still be irritated and find you annoying and still love you. That's the power of a parent's unconditional love. And of course, we want our children to be able to do that for us as well, right? They will take that energy and attitude in, and it will be part of the way they see the world. I think that's such an amazing gift. Now, what should I do if my child's hitting me during a meltdown? Again, we just talked about aggression. Children can be aggressive. It's very, very common. At least half or 50% of 1 to 2 year olds are going to use occasional aggression, 25% very often, and maybe 1 in 4 typically girls are going to be less physically aggressive. So physical aggression is also a sign that a child just doesn't have many tools in their toolkit. And by the way, hitting someone to get your toy really works very, very well at daycare. Short term, long term is not a great solution because then other people don't want to play with you. I told a story in my book, When at the Zoo, Watch the Humans, about a father I saw being punched in the face, I don't know, 7 or 8 times by his 5-year-old kid. I don't judge him. Part of parenting is taking the hugs and the slugs from our kids. But I think the solution I'm going to propose here is a healthy one. It's to take your child's hands, to have your boundary, and to say, if you choose to continue hitting me, you choose for me to leave the room. Is that what you want? Now, that's a boundary for you, okay? That's setting your physical distance. And the most common question I get from parents is, what if kids are chasing me around? Probably that's a child who really does need some extra support, I'm guessing, in the vast majority of cases. And that physical need for aggression is something that you need to teach your child to redirect. So probably they just don't have a way to redirect that physical aggression. If you choose to continue hitting me, you're choosing for me to move away from you. Is that what you want? Or you could put both those techniques together. I love you and I'll always love you. If you choose to continue hitting me, you're choosing for me to move away from you. That's your boundary. That's your line. Very, very simple. Because, and I get you understand your child's frustration. You can see they're upset. But would you agree to anyone hitting you regardless of their situation? The answer is no. That should be the minimum boundary we have when it comes to our relationships with our children. Now, next question. What should I do when my child has a meltdown in public? This is a great question. There's nothing worse than people looking at us. I would only say this. Imagine you're a parenting trainer and people recognize you on the street. People do recognize me on the street from time to time. So you're never quite sure if anyone's watching you. And of course, there is a little pressure you put on yourself to be perfect and to do everything properly, which is crazy because that's not possible. But I felt that for sure. So imagine how I feel when people are watching mine and my children have a difficult day. We all have difficult days. To err is to be human. Everything that is human is familiar to me. My recommendation is that we really just try and stick to that 5-step process as much as we can and act in public as if we're at home. The more consistent and structured we are with our reactions to our children's behavior, the more consistent and structured their reactions to us become as well. So it's a virtuous circle. Now, when it comes to the number one way to move from the red zone to the green zone, the simplest answer is whatever works for you, train yourself and retrain yourself to do more regularly. However, I think the most universal, most effective technique is those 5 deep breaths that we've almost certainly already practiced inside the Calm Parent Challenge, or maybe one of the techniques that you might have had from a guardian as well. It's okay to be angry. You have the right, mum or dad, to your anger as well. What's amazing is when you can actually train yourself to deal with it in a positive, harmonious way and to recognize the energy it gives you. The story I tell, for example, is one when I was arguing in the homework with my wife. Yeah, we weren't arguing, we just had a disagreement, but it got to an argument. And my daughter, she was 5 at the time, she turned around the corner and she goes, Daddy, take 5 deep breaths, do it now. My first reaction was, how dare you tell me that? You don't understand. You have no idea. You're just a child. That's super red zone thinking. Very judgmental, very aggressive. Then I took those five deep breaths. And within those five deep breaths, I went straight back into the green zone. And I had something I could do. I tell the story inside the homework of Dad, Dan, that's his real name, who arranged a code word with his kids so that when he got close to the red zone, his kids would say the code word. I think it was Snickers or banana or something. And he immediately stepped away to go down and breathe. Now, are we losing authority with our kids when we do that? In my opinion, we're not. Because we're showing them that we're capable of doing the thing that we're asking from them to do, which is to move from the red zone back to the green. And if we can't do it, how the heck can they do it? Ending this homework, I think it's important to recognize that we are going to get this wrong. We are going to have red zone moments. And that's totally okay. The challenge and the invitation I invite us all to go on is to rupture, repair, redirect for ourselves as well. I share a note that I wrote to my daughter. It's a love heart on one side, and on the other side, inside, I wrote to my daughter. I can't remember what I got angry about, but I said, I'm sorry I got upset and I shouted at you. I was tired after a long day. Next time I will try to remember to take five deep breaths. I love you forever and always. I don't know what kind of parent I would have been if I hadn't have decided to learn parenting. But I venture to say that if I'd been in that situation without being trained as a parenting trainer and as a parent, I probably would have taken the attitude of, you screwed up, your attitude sucks, you need to change, you deserve the anger I gave you, don't do that again. I'll make mistakes with my kids, for sure. We'll all make mistakes with our kids. But I think that that attitude of, hey, I screwed up, I'm learning from this experience, I'm not perfect, here's what I'm going to do next time, is an outstanding gift we can give our kids. Maybe one of the most, if not the top three most important things. I know what an emotion is, I'm not scared of them, I'm grateful for them, but I also know how to deal with them as well. So ending this homework, I talk about some of the classic mistakes. I mean, the classic mistakes are that we're in the red zone. And inside the red zone, we're just angry and frustrated and lashing out. My invitation to you the whole time is to take the wise decisions that you probably knew inside yourself you needed to be more inside the green zone. The second biggest mistake is that inside the red zone, we're just trying to use logic. We're still trying to convince our children they can't have an ice cream when they're just not listening to us. And the third is that we just don't understand what's happening inside our kids. So they're in the red zone, but all we're doing is sitting there looking at them going, you're doing this deliberately, you're a bad kid, there's something wrong with you. In other words, using the kind of language and thoughts that our parents gave us as well. And I think the ability for us to be able to say, hey, I'm stepping away from this situation because I'm inside the red zone. I'm going to come back to you in 5 minutes. Not, I need to win this argument, I'm the boss here, you listen to me. But I'm stepping away because I want to practice this skill is amazing. So I kind of started this homework the way I finish it, which is with this strong invitation for you to be the example of what you're expecting from your child. And for me, the red zone, green zone is the simplest possible way to explain to a child of any age what's happening inside us. I know it's very, very fashionable to talk about emotions and there's emotion wheels and all the rest of it. Name it to tame it. That's a technique from Dan Segal. I tried that. My personal recommendation is to keep it as simple as possible. Red and green is plenty fine for the vast majority of conversations that we're having with our kids. And you can do that with kids of any age. Maybe you can make a poster with them, point to it and say, here's where mommy is right now. Here's where daddy is right now. And this is what I'm going to do to get back to the green. The more you practice this, the more your child will be able to do it too. So thank you very much for joining me inside this homework. I do recommend, of course, that you also read the written homework if you can. Let me know if you have any questions from it. I can't wait to hear from you soon. It's been my great pleasure to spend this time with you, and I'll see you very soon.